Welcome to Extra Sequential, episode 62. We are a podcast in which we discuss comic books and the associated things.
We are a comic book podcast, as Chris mentioned, and in tonight's show, we're going to be talking all things Arkham Asylum and Arkham City in honor of the game, which is coming out this week and may or may not be awesome. It's not... It's not sure.
Well, it's actually coming out next week, despite what I may have told you. So, yes, Batman Arkham City. And all signs point to yes, if the question was, will this game be awesome?
Well, there's a good precedent set. And, I mean, I know a lot of people who've played the game and really enjoyed it, but maybe aren't so familiar with the comics or even that Arkham Asylum's like a pretty major recurring location there. So it'll be fun to go through that and suggest some books and kind of fill in, because there's lots of little Easter eggs for fans of the comics in the game. And we'll be teaching you about some of those and having a bit of a laugh talking about crazy Batman villains and such, I'm sure.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
What you just heard was a mere snippet, a superhero snippet. If you've ever tried to snip a superhero, it's not an easy thing, especially with the spandex, of the Avengers trailer, which doesn't open until May and is directed by Josh brackets, Buffy, comma, Firefly, comma, Dollhouse, close brackets, Whedon.
Sure.
And it stars a whole bunch of superheroes in the what is now known as the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, yeah, so the trailer has just been released, and I liked it.
Okay.
tell me otherwise.
No. I thought it was okay. Look, I mean, honestly, I'm someone who wasn't very pumped about any of the Marvel movies, and I don't really know anything about the Avengers per se, besides maybe like what I've read of Civil War and obviously like some video games. But I guess I'm not particularly sold either way, just as someone who's not really that familiar. I didn't see Thor, I didn't see Captain America, and I'm assuming they'll be heavily featured. But just like little bits in the trailer, I was like, oh, Scarlett Johansson, sexy as always. Chris Hemsworth's arms are ridiculously awesome. Did you notice that? Isn't he impressive? Yep. And there's this really lame jock metal playing through half the trailer. I don't know if you know what I mean.
Like, jock metal is a thing?
If you imagine like American jocks, like footballers, listen to what they listen to at parties, it would be the kind of heavy metal music that plays during this trailer.
Like Blink-182?
No, it's more like
Biscuit.
Yeah, more a bit like Limp Bizkit. Oh, God, we're going like back in time now, aren't we?
Are either
of these bands still playing?
First CD collection stops at 1997.
So I've learned. And there's one pose in this trailer, and now I expect it in every kind of hero movie.
The crotch shot?
It's the what?
The crotch shot where the camera's looking up?
No, it's the what I'm going to call the the hero pose, but it's kind of, I think it's defined every action film of this generation. It's kind of like this crouching down, like Shaolin tiger pose. It's like from all the wushu movies where one arm's bent near your face and the other one's like swept behind, like you just landed after doing something really awesome in the air.
Yes.
And I'm super sick of seeing that pose, and Scarlett Johansson does it, and I'm sure she does it in Iron Man 2 as well. So.
She does. She's like a martial artist, and that's one of their...
It's one of their things that they do. After they've taken someone down, they pose and hold that pose so if anyone was watching, that they can applause at that moment, I assume.
It does look like an interesting film, and I'm happy to see Joss Whedon with a multi-million-dollar budget and Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye, and we see the trailer, which goes for a couple of minutes, was ending this thing. They haven't shown us Hulk yet. They do. So that was pretty cool. I'd much rather see a Justice League film, but
really?
Okay. I'll quite happily see this.
Yeah, I mean, for it seems in line with all the other films that have come out, and I guess it's really interesting how it's the first movie like this where they've planned it and they've released all these films with the idea that they join. It just, I don't think there's really been anything like this. All other kind of mashups like Alien vs Predator weren't kind of planned ahead of time.
No, and it's like they need a decade long setup.
Exactly, and like every film before this has been like building the goodwill for Avengers. Mm. So the idea is every film before it had to be good. It's like they were all like 2 hour long or 90 minute long advertisements for the Avengers film in 2012. I'm sure a lot of people are really looking forward to this one, and it looks okay. I can't tell what's happening in the film from the trailer.
The rumor is that the Skrulls are going to be involved, which are shape-shifting aliens, long presence in Marvel's comics.
Hmm, good for them.
So, all right, NaNoWriMo, which isn't a Skrull, but NASH, that stands for National Novel Writing Month, actually starts in November, and I've known about this for the last couple of years, but I think this might be the first time where I've got opportunity time-wise to partake in it. It's begun since, I think, about 2000, and basically the goal is to write a 50,000-word novel from scratch, beginning on November 1 and ending at the end of the month. You can sign up and register on the official website for free, and basically there's blogs and forums which kind of chart your progress and challenge and encourage you. So
so what are the rules? Yeah. What do you have to do? Like, do you have to submit progress reports? What's happening?
Not necessarily. You basically just have to stick at it, really. I mean, you don't get, you know, fined or anything if you don't finish it. But, yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept, and I think I'm going to give it a go, much like you did with 24-Hour Combat Day. Even if you don't finish,
yeah,
it's at least it's a good thing to get started and get some cobwebs up later.
Yeah, you really kind of, it warms up your typing fingers, I'd imagine. You'd get all the writer's block would vanish with the deadline.
Yeah, I think a deadline helps. Otherwise, it's like, yeah, I'll write the best novel the world's ever seen.
Well, I'm expecting you to put. I'm expecting you to put examples of your finished work on the Extra Sequential Facebook site, which everyone should like if you listen to the show, because we post exclusive images and stupid things there as well.
Now the pressure's on.
Hey, man, I put up my crappy 24-hour comic, so.
It's true. No, they were very good.
Oh, well, I'm sure your novel will be excellent. You're a good writer.
Oh, thank you.
You're an award-winning writer.
Novel, though. Well, no, almost award-winning monologuist.
Oh.
Thanks for bringing up the hurt. You know how to cut me deep, man. All right, let's talk about someone who is a famous writer, although he's dead.
This is a terrible segue. Go on.
Stieg Larsson, the Millennium Trilogy novels are being adapted by Vertigo. Did you know about this?
No, I don't know what these novels are. Stieg Larsson, doesn't he drive the car in Top Gear?
Good one. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Played with Fire, and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, the American adaptation directed by David Fincher and starring Daniel Craig, is coming out end of the year, maybe next year. But I've seen all of the Norwegian or Swedish or whatever they are films, and they're actually pretty cool. Vertigo is actually adapting them as a three OGNs. So the first one, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, kicks off in 2012. We don't know any creators or whatever at the moment, but... that's a pretty bold move on part of DC Comics / Vertigo. So,
This will be their first kind of, I guess, adaptation of, like, at that point it'll be like a movie property and stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess the closest thing would be, Marvel have been doing the Stephen King Stand novels, comics based on his novels for quite some time. And perhaps the other thing would be the Twilight manga, which got... and rightly so, trashed by the critics because it's pretty atrocious. So this one should be pretty good.
Okay. Game of Thrones comics coming out, so I guess it's this whole thing. You know, I'm glad DC cancelled, Vertigo cancelled Northlanders. Brian Wood can go to hell. I'm so glad they're doing this instead.
What? You're glad they're doing, what was it, their TV? Game of Thrones?
No, Vertigo's doing this Stieg Larsson thing. Yeah. No, I'm sorry they... I'm actually very sorry they cancelled Northlanders.
But it stopped at a good point, like you had to wrap it up.
That's the kind of series you can't stop at a point because it is short arcs which don't really relate too much to each other. I guess we can keep it DC. It's been the sort of sales figures have tentatively come out for September. And these are diamond sale figures and they don't include returns. But we can assume there haven't been too many returns from DC sales in September. More likely to be third and fifth and sixth printings and so forth. But DC finally edged out Marvel in the sales department. I mean, it was to be expected, but it's the margin by which they beat them wasn't as impressive.
It wasn't huge.
They had more of the top-selling books, but in terms of market share per dollar and per unit, it was still very tight, surprisingly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess a lot of the... I think you'll find that a lot of the DC diehards like me who bought these number ones, you know, we have a limited budget, so we're not going to suddenly have a lot more money that we're going to... But I think as we start to become more jaded and die off, and I'll be giving up pretty much most DC books, well, pretty much everything of the new number ones, apart from maybe a handful. So I guess, yeah, and then hopefully the newbies will start to come. And people have asked me, you know, what I've thought. I'll put up a bit of a quick reviews of the series that I did buy, but it's still too early to tell whether this is a huge success, I think.
And I should mention now that we will be having a chance to talk about some of these new DC number ones as we guest star... guest feature in another podcast. Can you believe it, Chris? We'll be guests on the C-List podcast hosted by our chum, our buddy, Luke Milton.
Yes.
And his American cohort, who we've yet to meet, but I've heard he's lovely, so I'm very excited. And that should be coming up next week. We'll put a link up. We're not sure about dates. We're terrible at this. C-List podcast. Check them out. They're very funny. They review all the... they look at the minor and forgotten characters in recognized franchises, and we're doing a comic book-related C-List podcast. Yeah. So that should be fun for all concerned.
There are so many, you know.
How many times have I said fun in the last couple of minutes?
I'd say 84, and it's getting beyond ridiculous. So stop it before I sonically slap you.
Oh, that shut me up. Back on sales figures. I mean, comic sales are up 10%. This month, and 13% in dollars and 13% in units. So it's you could see how a lot of people have kept the same comics they were buying before and then stacked on top a lot of DC comics. So maybe that explains the more even market share. It's not like they dropped every Marvel book for a month, you know. But apparently graphic novels sales plunged 14% from last month, and it's actually 18% down from last year. That's not a good sign. I mean, I guess the bookstores have been having a bit of a difficult relationship with comics.
Digital is huge as well. Like, iPads everywhere now, and I think, you know, you've got this new Amazon Kindle Fire, whatever that is called. So I think, you know, yeah, OGN, physical OGN sales, such as graphic novel sales, may be down, but I think digital is on the way up. You've bought, what, digital comics for the first time ever?
Yeah, I don't know if I still prefer physical ones if I can get them. It was only a case that... I couldn't get them physically, and I've heard a lot of people are in that boat, so the digital sales for DC last month may seem bigger than they would be when people actually start getting the physical books. There might be a drop.
Yeah, that's
but people
true.
Are saying it's a scheme. They knew this would happen. They knew there'd be demand, and it would drive people to digital, but I don't think that's the case. It just seems like a happy accident for them.
Yeah.
And speaking of digital and everything... now, Barnes & Noble decided to get all pissy about the fact that DC has signed an exclusive four-month deal with Amazon Kindle for their 100, basically their top 100 graphic novels. And they're only going to be sold exclusively digitally through Amazon Kindle. And Barnes & Noble have their own electronic store, and they're unhappy about the exclusive deal. So they have basically said they're going to cease selling those 100 graphic novels in any of their stores if they're not offered the digital format to sell also. And the books have actually been pulled off shelves.
It's pretty sad. Yeah, I mean, people have been reporting that it's kind of like it's a mixed message within Barnes & Noble. So some stores have, some stores haven't. But it just seems like they're shooting themselves in the foot, especially now that the DC stuff is getting all this hype. It's such a bad business decision.
The comments I've been seeing seem to say more that DC's just kind of gotten in the middle of a war between Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Less likely that they've really taken it. Attacking DC, but DC's actually decided just to take the hit for the next 4 months, and they're going to keep that exclusive deal.
Okay.
So, and after that, it'll be available across all platforms, so that's when the Mexican standoff will be finalized. But it's the crazy world of publishing. These people are, you know...
It's a heady world, Maladdin. Heady world.
Are you right there?
Yep.
Old man?
I'm only 10 years older than you.
Is it only that? It feels like so much longer. Have you got any other news?
Nah.
Let's talk.
We should say congratulations to Sydney's King's Comics store, which I was visited recently, and also Black House Comics, another Aussie publisher. They were recently featured on a TV ad for the insurance company here in Australia called UI.
Ah, okay.
It doesn't really show much of King's comics or the Black House stuff, but it's basically just... We'll put a link up, but it's basically just people. It's got a woman from the insurance companies saying, you know, we're interested in everything. And I think there's like other ones, like stamp collectors or butterfly collectors and whatever, basically saying, we care about everybody, even comic book geeks, even though the ad doesn't show geeky, but it's just good to have.
Yeah. I guess they need a positive spin after the Queensland floods and everyone got really angry at the insurance companies at that point.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, people are very rarely happy insurance companies, though, unfortunately.
I know, right? Sorry to bring it down. I mean, I should have kept it light and breezy. But I guess the topic we're about to get into isn't light and breezy.
It's dark, man.
The Labyrinth Fiend. Spooky castle, that is.
David Bowie movie.
Okay, let's get into it.
All right.
September 1920. A radical step must be taken to combat Gotham City's diseased. February 1921. Construction has begun on the Elizabeth Arkham Asylum for the criminally insane. Finally, I will be able to treat my patients properly. June 4th, 1923. Gotham City is lost. The lunatics are irrepressible, incurable. The only sensible treatment, eradication. October 18, 1923. Am I a doctor or a murderer? I can no longer differentiate. I will give my last breath to deal with the filth that infects Gotham City.
2 years ago, actually, yeah, 2 years ago, 2009, a awesome game came out called Batman Arkham Asylum that had everybody very excited because it's basically Batman has had a lot of bad games, my lad, and, you know, for one of comics' most enduring characters, he's suffered on the consoles and PCs of generations of gagers.
Now, is that fair? Because yes. I can think of some good ones, surely.
No, I think you're mistaken.
The first Nintendo Batman game's actually pretty good. The Lego Batman's apparently quite decent. I've not played that.
They are good, but I think that they came out after Arkham Asylum. I think so.
Project Gotham, which is a racing game, has nothing to do with Batman. That's a fun game.
And on October 18 or 19, and I think a bit later for PC, the sequel comes out.
A whole month later.
Arkham City.
I'm sore about this. What? It comes out in November. Anyway.
Sound like Penguin. And good news today, we've just been officially told, by the internet.
Officially schooled by the net. Go on.
That it now includes Nightwing as a playable downloadable character from the 1st of November. So Nightwing, for those of you not in the know on the down low, Nightwing is Dick Grayson, who was the first Robin. He's all grown up. So it's good. And Robin is also Tim Drake, who's the third Robin.
He's would you say he's filled out?
I would say that. Some would say he's a tall drink of water. There's heaps of prisons in comics, especially Marvel and DC, which is no surprise. And I haven't found on my research, and it's funny when you say research, basically just mean Googling, that there's a wiki page devoted to comics, prisons in comics. And DC has by far the most, has 40 different prisons, fictional prisons. And I knew of some, Blackgate, Belrive, Iron Heights, the Phantom Zone. Marvel has a cool couple, like the Negative Zone Prison Alpha from Civil War. And I was watching the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes cartoon, which is kind of like a kids cartoon, like kind of like the Superhero Squad, but without the funniness to it. That appeared in that. There's also The Raft in Marvel, and there's quite a few. But yes, by far, Arkham Asylum is the most well-known and has also branched out into other media outlets.
Absolutely. I mean, there's something very striking about this particular prison. And I think, I mean, in its early days, I mean, it was introduced by Denny O'Neill, I think, in 1974 from rough memory. And at that point, it was just, I think, either Arkham Prison or Arkham Hospital. Eventually, it kind of got fleshed out a little bit more. And I think it's not hindered by the fact that Batman has such a memorable rogues gallery. And team-ups have always been a popular, villain team-ups especially, have always been a popular element in superhero stories. And you think a prison full of supervillains would be an optimal place for them to hook up, you know, chill over a cup of coffee and such. But the prison itself, I mean, it's been built and destroyed and blown up and rebuilt many times. I mean, in Nightfall, I remember Bane blows it up at one point. It's never a fixed layout. The facility itself is almost like alive as a character because it keeps changing, and it affects everyone within it. They all go a little bit nuttier than when they came in, and it obviously appears to have some evil spirits embedded in it, which we'll get into when we talk about some individual comic. I mean, the Asylum's really interesting. It's almost like I wanted to use a word that maybe you weren't familiar with just so I could prove how much smarter I am than you, Chris.
Only one of us wears the glasses and it's not you, but go on in your delusions.
You could not even read this word. Do you know what a palimpsest is?
Ah, yes. Is that like a palindrome?
No, you ass. you ignoramus.
I know what that word means. Please explain.
A palimpsest's a scroll where erase the...
yes, as featured in the upcoming Avengers movie.
Shut up. Where you erase the information on it and to reuse it, and it carries the mark of every iteration before it, but it's always changing and evolving and renewing, and that's what Arkham's like. And you notice that in the game. There's parts of the Asylum which are kind of new-looking and parts which carry this old gothic look with glass and mixed of metals, and it looks like a mishmash of all these different eras. And it is unique in that it's one of the few real locations in superhero comics that's, let alone Batman comics, like, usually it's just, like, random skyline, random gala. Attend a gala in Gotham City. And besides gimmick showdown locations like the Museum of Enormous Miniatures or something, maybe the Batcave also qualifies as a good location besides Arkham Asylum. But I can't think of many others which really, as a location, really stick in your mind. And
I think, I guess the closest would be the Daily Planet building just up the road in Metropolis. But yeah, Arkham Asylum has certainly been used as a setting and as an inspiration, and more than any other fictional setting apart from, I guess, actual planets. But as an Earthbound setting, Arkham Asylum has been used more than any other Earthbound setting.
It's interesting that, isn't it? And I mean, the prison itself, like, you think it's a kind of a bad idea. Get all the worst criminals. Yeah. I always think Batman needs to do what Superman does and just manage the prison himself. Or he could just ask Superman to house them at the Fortress of Solitude. Doesn't he have cells up there? He has a... I'm sure he has, like, cells up in
Fortress.
Kind of.
Well, he uses the Phantom Zone for that.
Oh, okay. See, I remember he had someone imprisoned up there in some kind of stasis, or maybe that's the Phantom Zone, yeah. But, like, all the guards there are Superman robots, so you don't have to worry about endless guards getting cut down in Arkham Asylum, which seems to happen a lot. Yeah, I mean, I've got some, like, downer notes here about the American legal system, which we'll get into later. Sorry, I'm a jerk. But, I mean, the Arkham stories have the appeal of, like, a gothic spooky house, you know, and recently they've got more of a prison drama thing going on, and they have the appeal of... Remember the old Universal Monster Mash movies, like Frankenstein meets Dracula and the Wolfman meets Abbott and Costello? It's the same kind of thing there, and that's what makes it fun to look at. I thought we could maybe just briefly go through some of the key kind of comics that feature Arkham Asylum as a major setting.
Sure.
I mean, I'm only going to mention this one briefly because it ties into the next one. But in 1988, Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean did a comic called Black Orchard. Orchid. Damn it.
It's a forest.
And I felt so smart about palimpsest, and I've gone and ruined that. But the character Susan in that, she's kind of Susan. I won't get into the details of the plot. She has to go to Arkham to get information from Pamela Isley. And
Poison
I mean,
Ivy.
Say again?
Poison Ivy.
Yes. They do like those names, which, imagine if she had, like, ice powers and then her name would be totally useless for her, you know?
Oh, yeah, but then she'd just change her name legally to, Crying Snowman.
Frostbite Chiller.
We're so good at this.
Yeah, but there's lines in this one like, "This is the final refuge of the lost and the soul dead. The little creatures babble on, and the darkness extends forever. This is the bedlam, the jungle of despair." And it's kind of this den of horrors, and the deep catacombs are kind of... it's the first time I remember seeing it sort of done in that way, like as this really kind of dark and scary place. And McKean returned to it a year later with Grant Morrison. This is 1989, with Arkham Asylum, a serious house on serious Earth, and like the longest byline on a comic ever. But this came out the same year as the first Tim Burton movie, and the graphic novel itself was a huge success.
It was, yeah. It's actually an interesting one, and I guess this is the first one when you mention Arkham Asylum. This is the first comic that you think of. I mean, Grant Morrison and McKean were actually quite new creators then, and this is when Vertigo was still kind of happening and the British invasion. I came up to it quite late, but yes, I just remember this being massive. And it's interesting that it sold, like, I think 500,000 copies.
I think because it was so different, you know.
It's very different from the film, and it's not like your typical Batman tale at all. Just everything about it is very kind of influenced by, like, you know, old school literature and psychiatry, and it's very odd. I mean, I know you've reread it recently. I haven't read it in quite some time, but there are a couple of things that stand out to me. Yeah. And you can correct me if my memory is faulty.
Oh, go for it.
There's a scene where Joker is basically Batman goes into Arkham Asylum and, I don't know, has to rescue people or something. You can explain the plot later. But Joker kidnaps a girl and he's like taunting Batman over the PA that he's going to blind her with a pencil. And then Batman eventually meets Joker, and he's like holding a pencil to this girl's eye, and then Joker blinds her.
That's not at all what happens.
I'm so confident.
You're almost right. Like, on the phone, he makes it, they're screaming, and it seems like he's stabbed her eye in, and then he meets her, and he comes there, and he releases all the hostages, and the girl's eyes are fine, and the Joker's April Fools!
That's what it was.
But it was a shocking page where you just hear the screaming down the phone, and Batman screams, no! And Commissioner Gordon also, I think, maybe says no, but not as loudly.
Good
for them.
We get enough of that, thanks to Darth Vader. Maybe that was an inspiration with Joker's pencil scene in The Dark Knight. Who knows?
Ah, interesting.
And the other scene I do remember was Killer Croc, who's like this big scaly dude.
Enormous scaly dude.
Yes. He basically stabbed Batman with a flagpole. And I think it might have even been the blunt end.
Did the flag then billow out through his body?
Slow motion. It did not. I think it was like through the shoulder, and I remember like, wow, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, there is this really violent scene in there. I mean, I should just quickly fill in, like, people haven't read the comic. It's literally a dark comic, I guess, both in content and in art. Dave McKean's art's fully painted, mix of photography and sketches, and it's very kind of arty. And so is the writing. I mean, it's always twists and turns around these kind of symbolic characters and really short, charged pages with him quickly transitioning to different locations within the asylum, like in this dreamlike way. And the Alice in Wonderland link is there, and Batman's kind of in his world beyond his control and understanding. And you really see how it's a place not just for the insane, but the kind of place that would drive you insane if you stayed in there for too long. And, I mean, the story two parallel tales of Amadeus Arkham, who's the founder of the asylum, his obsession with madness, and he attempts to build, this place to cure it, but it's also kind of a monument to it, and the parallel to Batman, who is also trying to fight madness and violence, but is in his own way. And I mean, Arkham attempts to treat the madness, but eventually succumbs to it when he kills the man who kills his wife and daughter, and he's eventually committed. And I guess that's the sort of thing they're trying to set up. Will Batman eventually fall just like his villains, you know? But and they introduce all this crazy stuff, like Arkham's this node of negative psychic energy, and that pops up in a lot of books from now on, and a lot of the crazy stuff you see in this, with like insane writing and babbling crazy people doing kind of rituals, comes up in the game Arkham Asylum quite prominently, especially all the hidden secret areas. I don't know if you recall those. You can see how normal people like Harley Quinn and Lockup and Great White Shark would go nuts, and we'll get more on all of them later. But the plot is, the inmates overthrow the asylum, they ask for Batman to come inside, and it kind of confronts him with all the personality aspects of his personalities, which he's been suppressing, because I've got a quote here from Batman. I could do the voice. It's me, I'm afraid. No, I won't do that. I'm afraid that the Joker may be right about me. Sometimes I question the rationality of my actions. And I'm afraid that when I walk through those asylum gates, when I walk into Arkham and the door is closed behind me, it'll be just like coming home.
Woody Allen is Batman.
But yeah, man, the stuff in this is just great. I mean, the Joker looks more terrifying here than ever. And this is where they introduced the whole notion. Morrison introduced that notion of his super sanity. I don't know if you remember that. Like, no. He's so insane that he's sane. It's a modification of human perception where he's just so much sensory information that he's overloaded and he recreates his personality every day. And that's how they tried to get around the fact that sometimes he's just a goofy clown prince of crime and other times he's a psychopath. So it gave writers an excuse to, okay, so he can be all those things because he reinvents himself. Yeah. There's a great bit with Two-Face where he's reduced to, through part of his treatment, they've taken away his coin and replaced it with a 78-card tarot deck. He's become this indecisive mess where the goal is to try and make him make full, nuanced decisions, but he can't even decide to go to the bathroom on his own. It's just this fantastic idea. There's so much in here. McKean later went on to criticize the work on the book, actually. I don't know if you knew about this, though.
No.
He was saying that he wasn't really a Batman fan, and he just wished he'd given it to someone who had more passion for it. And he said the overpainted, lavish illustrations in every panel just didn't work. It hampers the storytelling. It's interesting to see an artist take down their own work that way.
Well, he's wrong.
Ooh, burn. Yeah, it is a great book, for sure.
It is awesome.
I guess another one here, I think it was the second one I read back when I was first getting into Arkham Asylum years ago. The Last Arkham from 1992 by Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle. And that was a four-issue mini from Shadow of the Bat. And that introduced Amadeus's nephew, Jeremiah Arkham, who runs the asylum and rebuilds it in as a more high-tech prison, I guess. And he's doing more aggressive treatments on the prisoners. I mean, they introduced Mr. Zass in this. How do you pronounce that? Zaz,
the killer who cuts himself each time he gets a new victim, also seen briefly, I think, in Batman Begins.
Yeah, in this one, Jeremiah captures Batman and attempts to cure him of his insanity, and he's not entirely incorrect, but really Batman just wants an excuse to investigate the asylum from the inside because he suspects somebody's maybe been releasing the prisoners for their own ends, and I won't reveal the ending because it's one that not everyone has read, and I think it's come out in trade. So I think if you enjoyed Nightfall, this is a great comic to read. And, I mean, Alan Grant is I guess he's one of those early 90s writers whose style you're either going to enjoy or you're just going to find it very... what's the word I'm looking for, Chris?
Not good?
Not good. Okay, I wasn't going to go that far. I was going to go a bit... Turgid is also very kind of.
It's not flashy. A lot of Chuck Dixon and Alan Grant, they weren't flashy writers necessarily, but they were. It's very entertaining.
They got the job done.
And a lot of good writers in the '90s.
And I mean, during this period, I mean, I guess when you compare it to Batman the Animated Series, which had such great writing, these comics can seem a bit static. And I mean, there are a few episodes of the Animated Series which absolutely spring to mind. You mentioned one to me. Lock up.
Yes, that's one of the standout episodes for me, basically. And this was one of the few characters, I think there might be the only other one, might be Harley Quinn, that came from the animated series into the actual comics continuity itself. But Lockup was a guard at Arkham who was kind of this big hulking crew cut guy who got fed up of all these mad men and women getting paroled and released so easily. So he basically, I think, didn't he quit Arkham, but he built his own prison, and then he recaptured them once they were left, and then he'd kind of, like the Punisher, he didn't kill them, but he exacted his own justice, and he imprisoned them in his own, and then obviously Batman and Robin take him down, and then he was introduced into the comics a few years later. But, yeah, not much has been done with him in the comics, unfortunately, but I think it's an interesting...
Oh, for sure. It is
kind of a one-note character, but I think...
The episode's really interesting. I had a chance to quickly look at it today, and I mean... God, the prison looks great in this cartoon. It's perfect for their Art Deco noir look. But, Lyle Bolton, he's the head of security there, and he rules it with rules all the inmates with the physical terror, and the opens of this chapter of Scarecrow is trying to escape because he's so terrified, and Batman's like, "What? You're terrified?" He doesn't say it like that, but you know, he tortures and threatens them, and it's really reminded me of the dark and scary vibe of this series. And I mean, he's this ultra right wing character, and he doesn't just kidnap the villains; he kidnaps all the liberal lefty media and the commissioner, and because they're the ones to blame in his mind. I mean, in the end, he's committed to the asylum himself, but he's really happy about it, so he can keep an eye on everyone. Another one is Trial. I don't know if you remember this one, but it's a typical inmates take over the asylum, and Batman's put on trial, and the DA, who's wanted to trial him for years, actually has to defend him. Dent's the prosecutor, Harvey Dent, I should say, the two-faced man, as he's never been referred to. The jury's all the worst villains. Joker's the judge. I mean, the contention is that they're all freaks and monsters because of him, and he belongs there just as much as them. But, I mean, the episode's not great. The courtroom stuff just doesn't work. It's pretty clear, like, it takes 5 seconds to say, no, it's not his fault. Actually, he's there because of you. And then it turns into a pretty kind of boring action episode.
Yeah.
But a lot of episodes just kind of visit Arkham and, God, you know, the lightning cracking and that kind of stuff stuck around. And that's definitely in the game. It's always raining on Arkham. Have you noticed?
Yeah. It's not great weather over there.
Kind of bad. They should move it or... I don't know.
I feel bad for the Arkham Tourist Association. They must have their work cut out for them.
Well, no, yeah, they do. There's another comic here where they have like an opening gala at the asylum, and I'll mention this one later, but it's just so bizarre that people are so quick to go, oh, let's all visit the inmate for the most dangerous prisoners who constantly escape and riot and murder people there. Nothing could possibly go wrong. I also got a chance to reread this comic I love, and I don't remember if you've read this one. I think you have. Living Hell by Dan Slott and Ryan Sook from 2003. You've read this one?
Yes, you got me onto this. And I didn't read it when it originally came out, but I did read it later. And it's a great character study, and it's a great... Because a lot of writers trying to come on Batman and try and create their own kind of rogues gallery, introduce their own kind of characters that will last, and not a lot of them do, but this one actually works. So if you're a fan of Arkham or you're kind of sick of seeing the same old rogues gallery, then Living Hell is a must buy.
It is very refreshing to see all these characters introduced who have kind of their own, they have their own gimmicks and stuff, but they're not trying to one-up each other with badassness. And I should mention the covers of this are by Eric Powell of The Goon, which I didn't realize until recently, but I mean, the right balance is just struck here between comedy and horror. And there's so few comics now which let themselves be funny or let themselves kind of go, look, this is a bit goofy, but it's also...
Yeah, superheroes can take themselves very seriously. Oh, for sure. And so can us fans. But this, as I said, is a good balance of the two.
Mm. And I mean, it's so fun to see all the new characters who are quirky and funny, and they're playing off the established rogues gallery, and it kind of fills in this world. There's so many fun scenes of just them like having dinner in the mess hall and just kind of teasing and torturing each other for their mental ailments. and it's fun to read one where the Joker isn't the ringleader of the whole prison. I should mention the plot. Warren White, who's this skeezy white-collar criminal, which is so appropriate to our times, he pleads guilty by insanity to get off a charge of embezzling thousands of money through like a crooked investment scheme. He thinks he's got off scot-free, as you do, and then the judge gets the last laugh by committing him to Arkham Asylum. anyway, he calls himself the Great White Shark, but in there he's just new fish. So he's the bottom of the pecking order, until Harvey Dent, whose arms are in plaster due to a fight, needs him to flip his coins for him. And he's kind of passed around as everyone's bitch early on in the comic. Yeah. And you see over every issue, the asylum makes him worse. And it introduces so many cool characters. Mr. Cash, who's the one-armed guard who gets his arm bitten off by a croc and returns the favor a little bit later. There's a surprise role for Etrigan, which is so fun, the demon who rhymes constantly, and you rarely see him in comics these days. Humpty Dumpty, who is like a silly character. I mean, he's this fat guy who means really well, like to put things back together again, but he does it wrong usually, and it ends with disastrous consequences.
Freaky.
Yeah. There's such a WTF, I don't want to swear on the show, scene after the mini riot in the mess hall. They all see him crouched over something deviously, and they're like, what's he doing? Get your hands up. And then he steps back, and he's trying to put together all the bones of a chicken, of all the half-eaten bones of everyone's plates, into the whole chicken again. Really bizarre things. but yeah, this comic, more than any of these others, really fleshes this place out as a place where you could see inmates living together. I mean, Ivy and her bunkmate, you know, sell sexual favors in exchange for, you know, objects and various things. Like, you sort of get the idea. This is how this place functions in the real world. It's not just a nightmare labyrinth of horrors as it is everywhere else. It's kind of, I've seen a lot of people complain about this book or the characters from it, saying how lame the characters are. And I think they're just missing the point. They're meant to be funny. And I think fans of, let's say, Mike Mignola's Hellboy would really, say, enjoy this comic. And the look of it's a bit like that as well. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this one?
No, it is a very good series. And I remember reading the first issue and thinking, what's going to happen to this Warren guy? And then we basically, over the course of the four issues or whatever it is, he basically turns into another supervillain, doesn't he? I think Mr. Freeze kidnaps him and throws him in his cell or something.
Yeah, and it's a complex thing.
He loses his fingers. He loses his nose, falls off. And his skin turns white. And then he literally becomes a great white shark, and his teeth are nailed to a point.
Yeah. It's interesting how those major villains like Mr. Freeze barely factor into it at all. The reason I can't remember is because it's one of those minor characters like Magpie that they invented here, because she just collects pretty things. That's her thing. You know?
Yes.
You're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. She has there's bound to be petty crooks in there as well, mingling with the nut jobs. that scene where he loses his nose is quite striking. It's shocking and frightening and hilarious at the same time. I thoroughly recommend this book. Dan Slott is a very funny writer, and the story is great. Arkham Asylum, Living Hell. Look it up, because you won't regret it, I don't think.
Definitely.
Yeah. The only other sort of arc, I guess, I wanted to talk about, and this will include a few comics, and they're all kind of from the 2009 era of Batman. There was a Battle for the Cowl one-shot where David Hines, the writer on this, and he's an amazing horror writer. He wrote Strange Embrace, from what I remember.
Correct.
Now, this is another destroyed Arkham, and it's rebuilt again. But Jeremiah returns to the Arkham to check on his patients, and he meets these the three ones who are in like the lowest levels, which are, they can't mingle with other people, but they're basically harmless.
Yes.
There's one who's so obsessed
with
his...
There's no face. There's Mirror Man, and there's Hamburger Lady.
Yeah, her face is so horrifying that anyone who looks upon it will turn mad. And I guess they're doing this kind of Greek myth thing here, because he descends into, he calls it a labyrinth. And the one who's obsessed with himself, he refers to him as Narcissus. And they're very David Hine-esque characters. I mean, there's a child who at one point glued one of his father's prized masks to his face just to get it to stay on. And when the dad got really angry and went to tear it off in a fury, he tore off his son's face. Drama, a bit too dark for, pretty typical of superhero comics now, actually. But they restored it through plastic surgery, and it's just a blank, featureless slate which he draws expressions onto with paint. Odd things like that. And when I first read this comic, I didn't know anything about Jeremiah Arkham becoming Black Mask. So there's a scene where Black Mask orders to burn down the asylum, and it's rebuilt and so forth, but he promises at the end to rebuild it not as a prison, not as a hospital, but as a true asylum, a place of sanctuary for those whose unique qualities have made outcasts of them. Here we will celebrate diversity, we will build a new world. He does a bit of a mad dream speech. I'm sure you know more about the Black Mask thing than I do.
Yeah, Black Mask. I actually just watched Batman Under the Red Hood, which was, I think, from the animated film from last year, which has Jason Todd, the second Robin, coming back to life. That was on Foxtel recently. And, yeah, Black Mask features in that. Basically, he's a gangster. He wears nice suits, and I think his actual mask is a black mask made from the charred coffin of his parents, if memory serves me correctly. It is pretty dark, isn't it, this show? the first Black Mask, I think, tortured Catwoman's sister and then made her eat her husband's eyeballs or something.
Yeah.
So Catwoman killed Black Mask.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Jeremiah Arkham, the nephew of the founder of the Arkham Asylum, basically became a psychiatrist and head, and then he went a bit nutso, and he became the new Black Mask. And I think if memory serves me correctly, was it the three people that he were visiting, were they like they weren't real or they're imaginary? Or
that's
they were,
absolutely
like, personalities
right.
of himself. Yeah,
that's in the Arkham Reborn storyline, I believe, and that was also
Arkham Reborn. Yes.
Yeah, same writer again, and it just continues straight on. And that's a whole other plot. I mean, he's rebuilding the prison; things don't go quite right. That's where the asylum gala is, and of course there's food poisoning. Nothing too dangerous happens, but Clayface orders for dinner duck à l'orange and the crème de pastiche in a dark chocolate cup because Jeremiah Arkham wants to fancy the place up, and the inmates aren't prisoners, they're guests, they're honored guests, you know. And I realize that just means duck and orange sauce and chocolate with pistachio cream, so it's not so fancy when you say it like that. But he's poisoned of toxins, and there's a funny scene where he's screaming out, "You try to poison me with your foreign gourmet crap, bring me some burger and fries and make them American fries." Little fun things there. I mean, there's various malfunctions with Mr. Freeze's suit and Croc's water tub overflows and he almost drowns. And then there's the reveal that what's his face? Jeremiah isn't quite sane, and it starts to realize, okay, his personality has split between Black Mask him and also this third character who's the Jester, who's kind of like this evil twin of the Joker. And that's all finished up in Detective Comics 864 and 865, where he's committed to the asylum, and the other lady takes over, who's actually in cahoots with the Black Masks. It's all getting pretty complicated with this schizophrenic personality stuff.
It is,
that's for sure.
The other lady is Alice, spelled
that's
with
right.
a Y, Sinner.
Mm.
And I don't know why they... And she basically starts working. I think she starts working with Jeremiah Arkham, but she's kind of in love with him, even though she knows he's Black Mask.
I think she's in love with Black Mask. That's the thing.
She's got like red ribbons tied through her hair, and each one of the red ribbons are the seven deadly sins.
Oh boy!
So she's kind of like at first, she just kind of this quiet kind of, if memory serves me correctly, quiet kind of watcher of the inmates of the asylum, and then eventually she kind of has this grand plan. And but it's interesting that with a name like Alice Sinner, you'd think, why would you want to hire her?
They actually bring it up in the comic. She picked the name Sinner. She changed it from something before to Sinner. And Jeremiah Arkham asks her why, and she has this story about how her parents were cultist leaders, and she wants it as a eternal reminder of her dark past or something. I'm like, yeah, that's a good hiring policy, Jeremiah Arkham. After that story, I'd be like, your 3 month probation's up, and we've decided to not hire you as a full contract. And it's revealed
Talk
in this.
Talking about crazy.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's revealed that the whole thing's this complex manipulation by I think the Joker and Hugo Strange, who summoned like the Black Mask personality in him. So he's kind of, I guess, manipulated into it. And it's a fitting ending with Zas, where Arkham kind of pays off a debt to him, a threat of violence earlier on. It's just a nice little ending to cap off even. That harkens back to the last Arkham storyline where Jeremiah's first introduced in 92. So it's like, okay, at least someone's reading back that far. But it's not a perfect arc at all, like this storyline. But it's got some interesting ideas thrown in there. And it is complicated, though, that's for sure.
It is, yeah. It perhaps tries to get a little bit too clever, but it kind of works. And the art is suitably creepy. I guess we've mentioned Alice Sinner, we've mentioned Hugo Strange. So let's cap it off in our trilogy of... psychiatrist going off the rails and talk about Harleen Quinzel.
Yeah, wow. Now, she was a creation for the animated series, as a lot of us are aware. So the comic appearances she's in don't always seem to work. But she was Joker's annoyingly bubbly female sidekick. Hello, Mr. J. That kind of thing.
Yes, she's also in the games, both games, as a more of like an S&M kind of sexy clown, and she's also in the new Suicide Squad looking like a heroin chic stripper, which has got a lot of people riled up. But yeah, basically in the comics and the cartoon, she was a young, blonde, well-meaning psychiatrist who would spend her time with Joker and kind of began to be impressed by him in some strange way, and then basically fell in love with him and then eventually went insane herself.
It's a really fascinating story. Yeah.
Changed her name to Harlequin. Got up in a similar Jester-inspired outfit, and then they would go crazy nuts together.
Yeah, there's the episode of the animated series, and all the best stories featuring her are really in the animated series. Mad Love. Don't know if you remember this one. That kind of explains her backstory, and it's a great one. It's seeing all those scenes of them having their sessions together, and seeing him like just mentally screw with her. And she's just so devoted that, you know, he can kick her out of a window and she'll still love him. It's kind of creepy in a way. And that's,
she never really has approached Joker levels of cruelty. Like, she's still quite a bubbly, and she's almost an anti-heroine. She was in Gotham City Sirens with Catwoman and Poison Ivy, where they shared an apartment together in Gotham. That was actually quite a good series, quite a light-hearted series. But with a character with a kind of dark and twisted background, she's actually not. She's not a female version of the Joker, basically.
Yeah, that's for sure. She tends to get in the way of his plots. Like, if she's fine with him killing people, but sometimes she'll go, "I don't know, that's a bit far, Mr. J." Yeah, I remember in Mad Love, she only kind of gets through her hardest subjects in her psych course by sleeping with the professor. And it's implied in the cartoon. They don't actually explicitly say it, but they suggest it. There was a lot of stuff in that cartoon that's
implied.
Yeah, that's implied. You're like, oh, okay. I think there was a comic book adaptation of it, which is easy to... Well, actually, it's just been reprinted, actually. Before, it used to be quite expensive to get. And that's by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, as was that episode, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Yeah, Mad Love's a good one. What else you got?
I've just been reading. I thought we could focus on the city itself of Arkham City. So, in the actual game itself, we should point out, and I never actually finished Arkham Asylum game because my Xbox 360 decided to die on me.
Are you sure?
But Arkham City is also a 5-issue miniseries from DC that bridges the gap.
Yeah.
So between the two games, and that's basically Mayor Sharp. Basically, he decides to, after I guess the fair bit of destruction in the previous game, he decides to build a gulag, basically. So you make, instead of going from Arkham Asylum, make it into Arkham City. Mm-hmm. And on the poor suburbs, he makes this whole kind of corners it off and makes it into an actual city where the inmates can have a bit more freedom, do what they want, as long as they don't break out and interrupt the nice, God-fearing folk of Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade's actually out at the moment, just been released. And you can also buy it digitally as well. So, that's the Batman Arkham City, written by Paul Dini as well, and featuring art. I think every issue featured a different artist. But I picked up three from my archives.
Mm-hmm.
So the three I wanted to talk about, there's one called Batman Ghosts, and it's by 1995, written by Jeff Loeb, with art by Tim Sale. And those guys did Long Halloween, Dark Victory, and also Catwoman When in Rome, which I'm assuming you've got all of them. Some of those. Tim Sale would be familiar to most of you from the artist on Heroes, the TV show. There was the painter in that. Isaac, was it Isaac?
I've not watched Heroes.
And so there was, basically there was a painter in that show, and Tim Sale was the actual guy who did all the paintings. So, and he's worked with Jeff Loeb a fair bit. And this is basically kind of like a Bruce is trapped in his own mansion, and he kind of has visions throughout Gotham City, and he's basically revisited, much like the Christmas goes to Christmas past and whatnot. So first, basically, it opens up as a standard Batman adventure, and guess what? He's at a gala. Yes, a gala.
They love their galas. Launching some technology from Wayne Tech or something.
Yes, there's always, if you're a socialite, you'd be a busy socialite in Gotham. So he basically, Bruce says, you know, I'm not going to let you kill these people, and basically Bruce Wayne lets himself get shot point blank by Penguin's gun umbrella, handy.
Gunbrella, and then basically,
jumps out as Batman again. That night, Bruce starts to have visions, and it's never explained in the comic. It's just a short OGM with a hardcover. It's only like 50 pages. It's never explained, you know, did he have food poisoning? Did he have pizza before he went to bed? What kind of caused these? But he's basically his dead father visits him as a ghost, to saying, you know, I don't want you to waste your life as Batman. It's too dark. You know, you have so much more to live for. Then Poison Ivy shows up and basically takes Bruce through his own origin, through Batman's own origin. And much like the Charles Dickens story, he can only watch and can't interact. Lucius shows up. It's actually a pretty good tale, and it kind of revisits Batman's well-told origin, and often-told origin, in a nice way. Joker shows up as well. And then it ends with Bruce basically greeting the trick-or-treaters at the door, and Alfred mentions for the first time that they've never had all the lights on in the house before. So it's kind of not necessarily keeping with the Arkham theme, but basically it's just saying that, you know, Bruce is kind of trapped in his own mind and in his own Wayne manner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see that almost... as these, the guys are usually punches in the face being his guides.
He does have a love, like a love relationship with these people. I mean, they consider him almost one of their own at times when they're inviting him to the asylum.
Yeah, it's the chicken and the egg relationship, isn't it?
It's true. And they kind of, they've explored that a lot. Like, they want him dead, but then a lot of the time they get the chance, like, no, I enjoy this too much.
Yeah, there was a classic tale I remember when I was growing up, it was very hard.
You had a hard life when you were young. Raised in the streets, stealing hubcaps from Batmobiles.
It was very hard to get new comics, and one of the first I saw was at Coles, and it was like some kind of English reprint, like a Batman annual, and it had, Joker. It was a Neil Adams story, I remember that. Joker and Batman kind of facing off, and then basically Joker hits Batman over the head, back of the head, with a gun. So Batman's kind of sprawled out in this raining alley. Every alley rains in Gotham.
Oh, man.
And he's looking at the Gotham. He said, yeah, I could. He's got the handgun pointing at this unconscious Batman at his feet and says, you know, I could shoot you, but then where would the fun be in that? So he basically just puts the gun on his chest and then leaves. So, yes, I remember thinking, reading that as a kid, thinking, oh, that's deep.
Hmm. I mean, there's worse places to start than Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams for your...
That is.
Yeah.
Well, it was deep for a 10-year-old. One of the other ones I remembered was, this is from 1997, and it's just a, I guess, a 50-pager. This is written by Bruce Canwell, who's a name I've never heard before or since, with great art by Lee Weeks. It's kind of got some really great line art. He's done some good Tarzan work and whatnot. But basically, it's called Batman Chronicles the Gauntlet, and it basically focuses on Robin, as we know, who is in the Arkham City game. And he's basically his first real world test. So this is set in kind of the Batman Year One, Year Two kind of scenario. Basically, Alfred drops Robin off during the day, and he's given like a 6-hour heads up. And he's got to get back to the mansion before Batman kind of chases him. So he's basically, Robin has to survive alone in his Robin costume without getting any outside assistance, basically on his own in Gotham. So Batman says, see you later, kid. If you're still alive by the time the sun comes up, then you're Robin. You've got the job. Congratulations. So it's actually pretty good. So it's got all kind of the landmarks of Gotham, and obviously on the way, there is actually a mystery to be solved. But Robin is kind of solving the mystery, but he leaves clues for Batman because he doesn't. But they're kind of like riddle-like clues because he doesn't want Batman to catch up to him. So it's actually pretty good. It's just the actual bad guys are just gangsters; they're no one special. So Robin shows up at the Globe Theatre, which has shown up in a few comics of the day. There's like a good action sequence in the sewers, and of course the typical old warehouse and wharfs. But it's actually quite dark as well. Like this is 1997, but like there's a guy gets stabbed to death with a pocket knife in the street. There's like a porno dealer in here. It's actually pretty good just to show kind of the whole scope and the darkness of Gotham itself. And I thought the actual premise of the tale is pretty good.
It does seem like Arkham City, the game, now that you describe it, kind of going through, investigating little bits and pieces along the way as you fight through.
That is true.
Gangsters, yeah.
That's true. And it's got such a great premise as well. The other one I did want to mention was No Man's Land, which is actually a novelization by Greg Rucka, which is sitting on my bookshelf right now, which I haven't read. But basically, a huge earthquake hits Gotham. This is another one of those great 90s maxi series that Batman...
Oh, man, that went forever, it felt like.
Yeah, they did. The 90s was full of, like, you mentioned Nightfall. There was Contagion as well, I think, where this kind of Ebola fleshing virus swept through Gotham. And Cataclysm, No Man's Land, I think, was the last one.
Yeah.
And they don't do them anymore. But, yeah, basically this big earthquake, Batman had to rebuild the Batcave. I think the new Batgirl showed up then. Cassandra Cain was first
that's
debut.
Right, yeah, the city's kind of just closed off at the bridges and everyone's kind of left to fend for themselves. It is a lot like Arkham City, actually.
Mm.
The crooks kind of run their own little personalized ghettos within the city. So there's a marked off area, which is the Penguins, and they have little turf wars. And that actually seems to be something that's being used in the game. So that's actually quite a fitting one to bring up, because there will be districts run by the different gangs of the different crims
in
the game. So that'll be a fun one. I wonder if you can start turf wars in the same way he does in No Man's Land, which is going around putting tags or the other gangs on each other's turf to get them to fight amongst each other. It's a really interesting arc. I remember that one. I never read all the comics. I've only read the same novel you did. I don't know how good they are, honestly.
Well, I have yet to read the novel, but the comics itself are pretty good. Yeah, but there's like half a dozen trades, I think, so you've got to shell out your money.
And the novel's like $3 on eBay, so...
Gotham itself as a city actually has some pretty good history. I've got this one, which is a one-shot printed early in the year by Peter Milligan, mm-hmm. with art by Kieran Dwyer and Tom Mandrake, and I think this is a late 80s, early 90s three-issue miniseries from, I think, Detective Comics, reprinted as a 100-night special, basically called Batman Dark Knight, Dark City. And I know it basically just looks at the foundation of Gotham and like the dark kind of occultist practices that were made like in the 1800s. I know the 1700s, Thomas Jefferson is in here, and it's got stuff that Grant Morrison later used in his when Batman died and went back through time, and he had to face the bat demon and all that kind of thing. So it's actually got a kind of interesting spiritual occultist origin for the city itself. So there's actually been a fair bit of work done about Gotham, and the newest kind of series to revisit that would be Batman Gates of Gotham, which is a 5-issue miniseries, which actually just finished, written by Scott Snyder, who does American Vampire, and Kyle Higgins, with art by Trevor McCarthy. And that's basically looking at kind of the multiple eras of Gotham City and this kind of decades-old mystery connecting to the founding fathers that then comes back. The past comes back to all Batman in the present day, and there's a whole conspiracy and whatnot. So, Batman Gates of Gotham. I've only picked up the first issue of that, but it is pretty interesting. So if you want something a bit more with a bit more of a historical value as to Gotham and Arkham itself, then there's a fair bit over the last few years that DC printed.
That does sound interesting. There was one I've not read it yet, but I've been trying to track it down for ages. I think it was a 3-issue mini again, and it's about one of the original architects of the city, and that they hadn't knocked down the old creepy gothic buildings. They just built new glass skyscrapers over the top of them, like a skin.
Okay.
And then there's this mad bomber who's going around bombing the buildings in a particular way to get them to look like how they used to look in this gothic thing. And that was their way of making the city look more like how it was in the... I think this came around the Burton film, so they were trying to make it look more like the Tim Burton movie. Because that, it was just a generic-looking city, I suppose, in many of the comics. It took a while for that kind of... that different look, the scary city look, for it to catch on, because it takes longer to draw, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Batman, I do remember one comic from a few years ago where Batman was given like a photo of a hostage or something that someone had, and he was looking at the Batcave and he was teaching Robin. He was like, I know exactly where this is because he knew the city so well. On the back of his hand, he's like, see that, the back of that window, see that window pane there? That was like cast iron wrought in 1987, and this, that can only belong to this building. Let's go. Like he knows all the little clues. And
he's awesome at everything, isn't he?
He's Batman.
That's why he's always like, this is my city.
Amadeus Arkham, who we mentioned is the uncle of Jeremiah, he's actually back in current DC Comics, showing up in the All-Star Western when DC did this relaunch. Got to give props to him that they didn't just give us 52 superheroes. They gave us everything except romance, I think. And so Jonah Hex, which is a much better comic than the movie, starring... what's a face that got kicked off the Transformers films?
Who cares?
So it's written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, with great art by Moritat and Jordi Benet. Basically, here, Amadeus Arkham, this is set like the Wild West, so the 1700s, is a pioneer psychologist, and he teams up with Jonah Hex in kind of this Wild West version of the early days of Gotham. So, DC have got a lot of mileage out of Gotham City's past and future. So, yeah, that's in All-Star Western. One of the first two issues of that should be out right now.
I'm fairly certain the whole Jeremiah Arkham thing's been retconned, so now he's just the administrator again
Yeah, I think you might be right.
The black mask thing is different, I'm sure, now. Yeah,
yeah, and I did find that slightly annoying that every person that goes into Arkham ends up becoming a supervillain. But
it is like a factory for supervillains, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great for rehabilitators. Has anyone been rehabilitated?
They have the worst track record. It is the worst clinical psychology at asylum in the America today.
You know what I'd like to see? A reality TV show set in Arkham.
Would anyone watch that?
Vote, like, within the comics. Obviously.
You mean a fictional reality? I see. Yes. Okay, yeah.
Like, and then the Gotham residents can vote the most sane member off or something.
Well, it is a revolving door prison, so I guess it just works in aid of that. It is kind of interesting that they keep this prison going when clearly it does not work.
Well, they've got to put all these people somewhere.
Yeah, well, actual prison would be good, and not letting them have visitors carrying suspicious packages, not putting all the cells right next to the external walls would help.
You see them. I think you're in the cartoon, and you see them put in their cells in their costumes.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. Like, some of them try and pass it off as, it's part of their rehabilitation. We don't want to shock their system too much. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Well, whenever there's a riot, you know, they go straight to their costume storage and props area.
Well, it's what Bruce Wayne would do. He'd run straight to get the bat mask on.
That's true. But you think if you were the guys behind Arkham, you'd throw all that stuff. Throw Joker's suit in the furnace. Don't keep Mr. Freeze's freeze gun here.
Maybe he doesn't need the freeze gun. Just staying. Yeah, you're right. There's no reason to keep that technology there and not have it impounded in the sub basement of the police headquarters in Michigan.
Also, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the whole Arkham City thing, like when I was reading, like, oh, so they expanded the prison into the whole island, taking over all the towns. That's stupid. That's crazy. And then I recently read up on something, and apparently the US has the highest documented incarceration rate in the entire world. Apparently,
surprising.
In 2009, more than 2 million adults were in prison. That's like approximately 1% of the US adult population. And a further 5 million are on parole or probation. So with things that crowded, and apparently it's got to do more with their justice system, which is really quick to imprison after minor offences, which is probably not aided by types like Batman, who'll catch like a desperate mugger, drop them off at the police station. I mean, they're more likely to get a sentence, you know, whereas they might never repeat. And if they get sent to Arkham, you can assume he's going to become the chomper. Yes. Maybe I shouldn't write Batman comics.
Beware the chomper.
But see, community service would be a far better... there's just so much opportunity for these villain stories, isn't there?
Well, I know if the Joker or Killer Croc told me off for littering,
Mr. Freeze would be so easy to rehabilitate because you just put him on like a team which is working on some major scientific research, and with the outcome being to resuscitate dead wives, he would be so like, I'm on board for this. I will be a productive member of society with my cold, cold heart.
Yes. I think maybe these guys just get bored. There's a lot of bored scientists out there that I think perhaps their wildlife as supervillainy is an attractive career option.
Yeah, when they're not selling like gigantic Shrinko potions to Jimmy Olsen, they've literally got nothing else to do. Yeah, I think we've exhausted the crazy labyrinthine world of Arkham Asylum.
Yes, so that's Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, the game. It will be out next week. And if you do manage to pick it up, then tell us what you think. But it is a very good game.
And if you haven't played Arkham Asylum yet, and you're a Batman comics fan, definitely give it a go. It's the one game that makes you feel like you're Batman. There's detectiving, there's all sorts. It's a great game.
It's very much like the Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell games, where it uses stealth very well. So if you like those kind of stealth action games, then this is one for you.
Stealth gadgets, stealthy takedowns, all sorts of fun things.
Not stealthy dancing.
Maybe in Arkham City. There is going to be the Penguin's Iceberg Lounge.
Yeah, that's true. There could be some exotic go-go dances. I bet Harley Quinn probably dances.
A scene where you have to try and blend in to get close to the suspect.
It's bad to see. It's finally going to pay off.
Hey, that guy dressed as Batman's a really good dancer. Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to comment on any Arkham City or Arkham Asylum or History of Gotham related stories, or you know what not, please. Perhaps you've written some fan fiction for the Imaginary Gotham Tourism Association. Then mention it on Facebook or email us at chris@extrasequential.com. Next week, what are we doing, Melanie? Oh, and music from the show is from
PurgeAudit.com. You can email chris@extrasequential.com. And I wanted to mention that I think I mentioned it last week. I'm writing for the findmag.com, but I thought I'd just pimp it there as well. It's a music website, so if you're I'm putting up mixes and articles there. So check me out. Check me out now. How you like
I would
that?
If I was that sounded like a come online. Check me out, girls.
If you like it, put a ring on it or something.
What are we talking about next week?
That is a very good question.
I think it's manga.
Oh, is it? Oh, awesome. Cool.
Manga for beginners, because you whined and complained that we'd be talking about superheroes for too long, so I bowed down to your...
It has been a very superhero-heavy last couple of weeks for me.
So next week is heavy superheroes. We'll be talking about The Thing, The Hulk.
The Hulk's not fat, is he?
Yeah, but with a pH, like a chemistry.
Oh, stop that. Yes.
So manga for beginners.
Yeah, it's kind of a... Chris and I were having conversations where it's kind of... it is hard to know where to start, and it's very easy to get bad recommendations of manga. Because just like with regular comics, there's so much crap out there that it's very easy to sour your taste buds on just comics which aren't good. So we'll be recommending some, and based kind of on if you like X, you might like Y. We'll be trying to address some of the criticisms and comments I've heard directed at manga, and I'll send the call out to the Facebook website now, and I'll put this question up there on the site. I guess your questions or any queries you have about manga or criticisms about if you're not a fan of it, a vocal opponent of the form, and I will rip into you on next week's show. But you'll get your email read out on the show, so the best of both worlds.
Or if you have recommended a certain manga to people
and had success. Or if you've been recommended something really bad and have terrible stories about that, we just want to hear. Yeah, it's basically an introduction for manga, so it's a great show for you folks there who don't know a whole lot about it. And for you who are familiar with it, you might find something you've not heard of before. So I'm looking forward to next week's show.
It's a whole new world, as Jasmine says, isn't it, Aladdin? Thank you for listening, we will look forward to your comments.
See you all next week. Stay law-abiding.
Indeed.
Insane. See ya.